Hey, this is post-production Matthew Marissa. This is part two of a two-part episode. Apologies for the long wait between parts, but let's just say there's been a lot of personal issues. Also, at around the 12 or 13 minute mark, somewhere between those, there is discussions of rape and sexual assault. Content warnings are always found in the description, and we will also alert you for any content warnings as they come up in the episode. Enjoy listening.
I'm connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for when a computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Episode 7, Sayaka confronts Kyubey. She's like, hey, what the fuck? Kyubey explains that, like, yeah, you're not taking any pain. You're not feeling any pain. But it does get stored, and I can show you what it's like. And so he transmits, like, all the pain that Sayaka could have taken up till this point while fighting witches. And it's like, yeah, it like, breaks her. Like,
Yeah.
Think about every injury you've ever had, and imagine getting all of them at the same time. That's essentially what she did. And this is an act of punishment.
Yeah, this is Kyubey being essentially like, you know, well, if you didn't want me to separate your soul and body into this little gem, then I guess I can show you what it would have been like if I didn't do that.
But it's not just that. It's like Kyubey acts like a character without emotion and without connection.
Yeah.
But this feels like such an act of, like, torture and threat.
Yeah.
That he is, like, putting this fear in Sayaka. Like, I have the ability to incapacitate you with sheer pain. And that's what, maybe it is just an explanation and he doesn't understand the weight of it, but it does feel like he is reprimanding Sayaka for even so much as, like,
challenging him.
Yes. The next day, Kyoko takes Sayaka on a trip. She's like, hey, you should skip school with me. And Sayaka, having had the worst night of her life again, just says, okay, fine. Kyoko wants to extend a sort of olive branch because now, you know, Sayaka is confused and scared, and Kyoko realizes as well that she's been lied to, and they want to connect. So Kyoko tells her tragic backstory. She takes Sayaka to this, like, old, decrepit church. Kyoko, her father was a priest in, like, I don't know, Catholic Church?
I think it was, like, just, yeah, vague Protestant, vague
Christian
sect.
Church, yeah. Unclear. But nobody wanted to go to her dad's sermons.
And, like, notably, the way she describes it is that her dad was very, her dad preached, you know, the true preached, like, actually doing good in the world, you know, actually caring for your neighbor and whatnot. But no one cared.
Yeah. And so Kyoko made a wish that her dad's sermons would be listened and heard, and that her dad would be a, like, popular preacher. And this was going really well for her and their family, but eventually she came clean and she said, Dad, I've been hunting witches, which is kind of like what you do. You preach goodness, I help fight evil. We're kind of doing the same thing from different sides. But also, by the way, when I did that, I kind of made a wish that made you popular. And her dad has a breakdown because he realized that he wasn't actually reaching people. People were being hypnotized to follow him.
Yeah.
He wasn't making an impact in their hearts. So he committed a murder-suicide.
Yeah. And specifically keeps Kyoko alive to suffer, basically.
I'm pretty sure it's that he just, like, didn't kill Kyoko.
I'm not sure. I want to say that's a detail that I got from Wikipedia, so, you know.
Well, I think part of the implication is that she couldn't have died from it. Because she's a magical girl.
She is a magical girl. That's also true.
That I think even if her dad, like, stabbed her, she would survive.
Yeah.
Kyoko, since then, has been an orphan who is kind of just on her own. Homeless, I think, as well. Or at least hiding out in the abandoned church as her home.
Yeah.
Which isn't great.
She's a wanderer. Like, she comes into the area like from outside of it as well, so it does kind of make sense that she's just sort of a traveler.
Yeah, and shoplifts. She steals food to survive. And I think Saika at one point is like, you shouldn't steal things. And Kyoko's like, don't patronize me.
It's just a piece of bread, guys.
You don't understand what I've lived through. You can only say that because you've been provided for. Kyoko wants Saika to be more selfish. Saika views this role of a magical girl as a hero, to selflessly sacrifice oneself to, you know, perform heroic acts for the greater good. Kyoko has seen how that can change people and how it can be destructive, and so she treats it as a job that she does to survive. Kyoko, I mean, like I said, she steals food to live. She is okay with breaking taboos in order to survive.
Yeah.
And that's also why she stopped Sayaka from killing that witch familiar, was that Sayaka thought she was doing this for the greater good. Kyoko was like, there's benefits to not killing it now that help you live.
Yeah.
That your soul gem will become purified by with familiar whatevers. And so you can use more magic if you wait for the grief seed to drop.
Although I think notably, even in that scene, I think that it is actually highlighted that she even says, you know, wait for it to kill a couple people first to mature.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it is still kind of a life or death stakes in that sense. But it is a very interesting, like, Sayaka and Kyoko are kind of mirrors to each other.
Mm-hmm.
They are literally red and blue as well, of course.
Yep. They're also gay.
They're also extremely gay.
Or at least Sayaka's bi. So Kyoko, by the way, so she carries around a bag full of apples. She takes a bite of an apple. There's a bit of a fruit of knowledge thing going on.
Yeah.
But also, the usage of the apple motif reminds me a lot of Death Note and how it's used in Death Note.
Yeah.
Death Note does have a fruit of knowledge thing going on as well. But in that series, apples are kind of used as, like, the deal with the devil. It's more of a Faustian sense, because the forbidden fruit is often framed as, like, a good thing that has a hidden catch, in a way. Whereas the Faustian bargain, I think, implies that there has already been known to be a bad deal.
Yeah, yeah. You know by taking this deal that you are, you know, signing yourself up for some kind of knocking down.
Yeah, it's, do you believe that the original sin is a accident or a victim thing, like Adam and Eve were victimized by the snake, or do you believe that the original sin was well explained to have consequence that were ignored?
Yeah.
I think there's a few anime, at least Death Note and Madoka, that kind of take the latter stance. Also, Kyoko, like, tosses Sayaka an apple, like, here, have a snack, and Sayaka just drops it on the ground. And Kyoko gets really pissed.
Yeah, Kyoko's like, hey, fuck off, don't waste food.
Yeah, which I think is very endearing.
Yeah, very, very fun. Again, very good characterization of, like, she's a character that flaunts, you know, societal regulation. Regulation. She's a character that doesn't give a shit what OSHA has to say.
Yeah.
She's a character that, like, flaunts societal pressure and, like, puts a lot of that beside because she is like, I have found the version of life that I need to live for myself. And that's really interesting.
In many ways, it's a trolley problem.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not really like a friend is in danger.
Yeah.
In both their instances, it's ultimately how far do you want to exert yourself to help others that might not know that you're exerting yourself at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I also think you can probably see a bit of a thing going on with wishes that we will explain in a second, because as if today can't get any worse, Sayaka goes back to school and Hitomi approaches Sayaka. Hitomi, Sayaka's childhood friend, and Madoka's friend. And Hitomi says, hey, I've got a thing for Kyosuke. I noticed that he's out of the hospital. He's been coming back to school. He seems to be doing great. I wanted to let you know that I have a thing for him and I will confess to him tomorrow. But you were his childhood friend, so you've got dibs. So I'll give you one day. And if you don't confess to him in one day, I'll take it as you giving me your blessing to go ahead with this. Which, honestly, too much class.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I kind of love this. Hitomi is like, look, I know we both like the same guy.
Yeah, like, it's... It is respectful in a very fun and interesting way.
Yeah. So here's sort of a big part of this. Also, worth noting that because of all the shit Sayaka's going through, between seeing her new best friend and idol die, to learning that her body is nothing,
yeah,
to like fighting literal monsters, dealing with the stress of all these other people like Homura and Kyoko, she hasn't been going to school as much. Whereas Kyosuke has been going to school now that he's been healed.
Yeah.
This magical girl role has sort of completely taken her away from the things she cares about, including what she spent her wish on. Which leads me to a point that, while not overtly said, I don't think, there is a clear underlying theme that the wishes are monkey's paw wishes.
Yeah.
That they lead to more tragedy than they provide. Because at the very least, we know Sayaka wished for Kyosuke to be healed, a selfless wish, but Kyosuke ended up going to school more, which led to him interacting with Hitomi more, which led to him falling in love with Hitomi. So, like, the reason why Sayaka healed him, which was ultimately a selfish reason of, I want him to be happy so that he can date me,
yeah,
ended up turning on her and making her life worse. In a way, Kyoko, the other like main known wish, wished that her dad would be heard, but this ended up driving her family to death, driving her father to death especially, and it kind of missed the point of what he was preaching and what his ideals were. Both of them made selfless wishes that ended up in tragedy, and I don't think this is an isolated incident of two things having similar outcomes.
Yeah.
My sort of interpretation, I guess, is that the wishes made in Madoka to Kyubei, in contracts, are meant to have tragic outcomes.
Yeah, that like...
And there is a reason for that.
Yes.
That is supported in the text, but I cannot explain it yet because it's a very important spoiler to talk about later. But keep that in mind, I guess.
Yeah.
After Sayaka has the worst night of her life, she has a breakdown, and
yeah,
this is where I need to put the other major trigger warning. We are going to be talking about sexual assault, and because the Sayaka breakdown scene is one of the most heart-wrenching, like, terribly sad and painful scenes in anime,
yeah,
and it's powerful and emotional, well-acted, and taken seriously.
The series does not depict explicitly or even implicitly, to be clear, any form of sexual assault.
So, Sayaka, she's crying heavily and is distraught, and Madoka ends up being there at her house to comfort her. Sayaka, she says a lot of things, but the main thing is she worries that her body is ruined. She says things like, how could Kyosuke love me when my body is like this?
Yeah.
She has been damaged in a way, and she finds herself unable to be loved.
It's, yeah,
undeserving of love. She's been manipulated and violated, and I think there is a very... You can compare this to the sort of language of rape victims. And I mean this completely seriously, that, like... In I think this is allegorical.
Yeah.
That the feeling Sayaka has of her body being tampered with, tainted, sort of destroyed.
She discusses her body as though it is a separate thing from herself, which is, like, it's the sort of thing where, in a literal sort of Watsonian sense, there is truth to that in the narrative, but the, like, Doyleist reasoning, the kind of, like, thematic reasoning and the way that it positions it, the way that the series kind of talks about it, it is a exceptional way of, like, talking about it or having these themes without explicitly having it.
Yeah.
Because, like, but, like, yeah, it is this very, like, intense and upsetting breakdown where she kind of, again, just talks in very dissociative terms, talks in very, like, you know, my body is unpure kind of terms, and, like, it's cathartic. It's not, and I say cathartic in, you know, a neutral way, where it's, like, it is sad and tragic, but at the same time, you can understand why it is being made in this way, why yes. she's reacting in this way.
Yes, there is parallels to be drawn, and I think especially that feeling of, like, she feels she is unpure and undeserving of love is very similar to those situations, yeah. I guess, is the euphemism I'll use. Very, like, I think if you are sensitive to this topic, you should honestly skip this scene because it is very realistic in that aspect.
Yeah, yeah.
That while the act isn't presented on screen, there is no sex or anything of any kind. It is a very clear allegory that is done with intent and purpose. That is sort of the end point of episode 7. Episode 8, Sayaka is manic. She kills a witch to, like, try to relieve her stress, and she gives the grief seed to Kyoko because she's like, oh, if you care so much about these, here, take it. And Kyoko is like, no, you really should. Your soul gem is looking pretty dark.
Yeah, yeah.
You're,
I think it's something
exerting,
like,
yourself.
Kyoko, I think, specifically comes to Sayaka as kind of, like you said, to sort of be like, dude, you're not doing okay.
Yeah. And Madoka then tries to help as well, to try to stop Sayaka and get her to rest, but Sayaka snaps and runs away. Then Kyubei reveals the next biggest twist. If Sayaka's soul gem isn't cleansed, she will turn into a witch.
That's right.
So I believe you were right in that they do say that you have to purify your soul gem using the grief seeds before that bit with Sayaka.
But they don't explain the ramifications of what if you don't.
Yeah, I think it's explained like you need to have your soul gem pure to use magic. It's like a mana pool.
Yeah.
And when it's depleted, you'll be weak and powerless. So the only way to successfully fight witches is to replenish that. It's like ammo. But it's not like ammo. It turns you into a witch. Witches were magical girls whose soul gems darkened. And soul gems don't just darken via using magic. It darkens with their emotional state.
Yeah, yeah. If they just have, you know, a breakdown, they will become witches.
There is one more scene where Homura tries to give Sayaka a grief seed, but obviously Sayaka declines it from Homura. She still does not trust her. Homura is about to kill Sayaka before she can become a witch, but Kyoko stops her. She's like, please, no, we have to try this. Kyubei, meanwhile, goads Madoka, like, hey, you know, you could save Sayaka if you make a wish. And Homura shoots Kyubei instead. She shoots Kyubei, this time he dies. Kyubei got shot by a gun. Sayaka runs off. Madoka tries to chase her. Meanwhile, another Kyubei appears and shows up, and he's like, I kind of wondered about this, Homura, but you seem to know a lot about what's going to happen. You're from another timeline, aren't you? So there's that to stew on.
At this point, Sayaka ends up getting on a train. I think while this is being explained to Madoka, it kind of like interjects in.
Yeah.
And she gets on a train, and the only other people on the train are these, like, two shitheads who are talking about women in very misogynistic terms. It's very, you know, dude, that waitress had, you know, a nice rack, and, like, etc., etc. And so Sayaka, like, starts, you know, being like, is that all women are to you? And, like, you can see the like, tones get a lot darker, and as she's, like, you know, having these intense emotions, the, like, reality around her, I believe, starts warping, and we end up seeing her process of turning into a witch.
Sayaka meets Kyoko afterwards. Kyoko has been able to track her down and meet her right after this train scene. And Sayaka's like, I killed them, I think. I don't actually remember if she outright does, but I think she does kill them.
Fairly certain she does.
And then
no tears will be shed.
As she's talking with Kyoko, her soul gem breaks and becomes a grief seed. There's also this wild line that Kyubei says at the end of the episode, which is like, just like a woman who has yet to mature is called a girl, a magical girl is a witch that has yet to mature.
Yeah.
Wild thing. Okay, so now we can talk about one of the biggest themes and, like, symbols present in the series. this, I don't think this is exactly a uncommon or original reading, but a lot of aspects of Madoka Magica feel to me as allegorical of the entertainment industry and how it treats girls.
Yeah.
So they're offered a contract in which their dreams will be answered if they just sign there, but they sell their soul and their body, often leading to situations where they either feel like they've been violated or literally been violated in, sadly, many cases.
Yeah.
And there is also an aspect of once they mature, they are bad and have to be sacrificed to the new blood.
Yeah, yeah. The, like, cyclical nature of, you know, it's not just that you can grow with dignity, it is that in growing, in maturing, you end up bad, you know?
And magical girls, like, in the fiction, they have to subsist off each other, they have to compete and cannibalize each other, because, like, they're competing over resources, grief seeds. They need to eat other magical girls, essentially, by getting grief seeds from witches. If they can't, they become a witch. There is this element of competition that does not at all foster a realm of, like, friendship and camaraderie.
Yeah.
That they're sort of taught indirectly to treat the other girls as competition who are stealing their spots or their spotlight.
Kyubei is top 10 hated characters in all of anime.
Yeah.
But the reason and way in which Kyubei is a absolutely terrible fucking piece of shit asshole are very robust and like deeply, deeply interesting to analyze. Because the thing is that Kyubei's whole deal, like his whole modus operandi is that Kyubei is an impartial observer. He makes contracts with people without telling them full information, but any information that you do ask him directly is the sort of thing that we will probably answer in some way with some modicum of truth. But, like, he is constantly very manipulative, constantly not telling people incredibly vital information, and then acting as though they are the irrational ones for then being upset with them. But the, like, way in which Kyubei positions himself, the way in which he is, like, you know, you signed a contract, you got, you know, a miracle, a wish, something that literally could never have happened otherwise, you have no reason to be upset. Like, that style of mentality, that style of, like, you signed the contract, so really you're at fault for everything that happened, that is so incredibly salient as a point with regards to the entertainment industry, and especially with regards to the entertainment industry in how it indoctrinates, you know, young people, especially young girls, and, like, you know, cyclically feeds itself. Like, it's wonderful, because the other thing is, and minor spoiler, but there's a lot of Kyubei. There's a lot of Kyubeis, and they all look the exact same. And, like, that is also a very lovely little piece of theming where, like, Kyubei is this very small, marketable, plushy-looking asshole, but he always has, like, wide-open eyes and, like, the little, you know, three-shaped mouth, and, like, the close-up on his face, like, staring at the camera is a constant thematic point.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, he's this sort of voyeuristic force.
Yeah.
And, like,
his eyes look like camera lenses in a way.
Yeah.
As if he is surveilling the people. Consider that he sleeps in Madoka's room. That's even more fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he, and when we say zoom in, like, there are many scenes where even without saying something or before we know he could talk, it zooms in so it's just his eyes and his mouth, and he is staring directly at the viewer.
Yeah, yeah, as if to kind of, like, clue you in that he is more knowledgeable or, like, is, you know, doing something just by being here that we don't necessarily know fully.
It's a little accusatory as well toward the audience.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you like seeing these girls suffer? Doesn't that fucking suck?
Yeah.
She had to die. She had to have her head bit off. Don't you love that? Isn't that great television?
Isn't that what you wanted?
And, like, he is a big manipulator. Like I said, he constantly goads Madoka into making a contract that, like, most of the times where Madoka is about to, in, like, Homura does something, it is because Kyubei is, like, putting the idea in her head.
Yeah.
It's not just that, it's not even that he just hides details about the contract, it's that he actively encourages it and, like, manipulates them into wanting to do it when it wouldn't really be their own idea to do so.
Yeah.
He is okay with engineering situations where people could die or do die because it might get more contracts.
He is a gaslighting, like, manipulator who is constantly sort of positioning himself as an unbiased third party, simply offering alternatives and solutions. He is offering a solution to a problem he is responsible for.
Yeah, it's the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, like, it, and obviously this isn't, like, the entirety of the series. I often try to make it a point to say that a series can have more than one theme or allegory or representation. I also wanted to note that at least as they are presented in media that is available to foreigners, such as us, oftentimes idols have clothing and costumes similar to magical girl costumes.
Yeah.
Very poofy dresses, kind of exaggerated fairy tale looks sometimes.
Very, very feminine, very girly.
It is a concept of girliness in, like, femininity and childhood that is often sold to be consumed, not just for little girls, but also for grown-ass adults. And the idol industry is a fucking toxic hellscape.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways Madoka is a commentary on that as well.
Yeah.
It is really a shame that there are, like, there isn't, you don't get pinups of the characters of Madoka, but I feel like there is merchandise that kind of is meant to be suggestive in a way.
Yeah. So something that I would like contrast just a bit between the show and the movie is that the movie also has a section with, like, all, you know, they all do their cool transformations. I think the show is a little more willing to sexualize them, and I'm willing to bet that the movie, that's the sort of thing that they, like, consciously did less of in later material. Understanding that, like, if you put out this into a media that, like, is meant to, you know, is meant to deal with the themes relating to little girls and what they struggle through, even if it is meant to be for an adult audience, you're going to have to be responsible with that, so to speak, because even if there is supposed to be a theme of, you know, like, little girls and, you know, like, teenagers and, like, learning your sexuality and finding yourself, that sort of thing, there is still an audience that is not that. There is still an audience that is not that, that is going to be watching the same product.
I think there are a lot of ways where Madoka Magica interrogates the audience's relationship with magical girls and things like that.
Yeah.
And that's also why Kyubei stares at the audience.
Yeah.
It's not just like, are you getting sick, you know, are you getting off to the fact that there's death and violence and all that and torture, but it's also like, how does this compare to your average, like, idol or voice actress or child star? I think the thing about idol culture in Japan is you can actually compare a lot of it to American child stars.
Yeah.
Specifically Disney Channel characters.
Like,
actors and people. I think, like, compare a lot of this to,
Jeanette McCurdy?
Yeah, Jeanette McCurdy and what she has talked about in the past.
Like, yeah, that was my immediate thought, was, like, the...
Or, like, things from Quiet on Set.
Yeah. That particular side of the entertainment industry. The idol industry is one of those things where, while I am going to happily sit here and tell you that it is bad and, you know, in general, a very negative force, it's also one of those things where I would feel weird, like, really sitting and really trying to shit on it, because at that point it would feel like thing bad Japan.
Well,
you know,
but at the same time, like, I will gladly say that Disney Channel stars are, you know, horribly treated.
Yeah.
I'm more so saying that I think for a lot of Western audiences, they put up a sort of cognitive barrier of, like,
yes,
this doesn't happen in my culture.
That's exactly what I mean. Is, like, The idol industry is very specific to Japan, and so I feel like there's an aspect where, because it is very specific to Japan, a Western audience might not make that kind of connection to the Disney Channel style.
My argument's more so that it's not specific to Japan. Not only because Korea pretty much copied the model wholesale.
Also very true.
But also because it really is so comparable to the American side that it doesn't make sense to say that they're separate but similar.
Yeah.
I just think, like, this happens a lot with Japanese media because it has this weird legacy of being viewed as so wacky that a lot of people overcomplicate cultural differences.
Mm-hmm.
I will recognize that there are differences, but I don't think it's so unknowable in a lot of ways. And I think that's something that Madoka is very effective with, is like, a lot of the emotional truths that are present in the series are applicable regardless of if you've seen Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
It is a deconstruction because the cute mascot character is actually the biggest bastard who is like a grooming manipulator. And not just because the powers they get are actually done by essentially cannibalism and not by friendship. And it's not because the happiness that the girls get and the ability to help people is overshadowed by the torment it causes them and others. Like, it is a deconstruction of the genre, but you almost don't even need to know all the genre tropes to understand a lot of what the series is going for.
Yeah, yeah.
So Homura, episode 9, Homura brings Sayaka's body to Madoka, her body having become lifeless, but like, Madoka still wants to essentially give her a proper a burial or ending of some sort. Kyubei finally explains the whole setup to Madoka. This, by the way, is happening in Madoka's bedroom at night.
Yeah.
Kyubei explains that despair is an infinite energy cheat. He's like, so, you know, entropy? The universe is going to run out of entropy. But it turns out human emotions, especially strong emotions felt from girls, is actually so potent that it can, like, recreate stars. We can beat the heat death of the universe by using despair. And so, we essentially pile up all the hope. They are using hope and despair, and I always think of Danganronpa.
Yeah, I was basically sitting here going, all right, countdown until I get to make the Danganronpa joke.
Yeah, it's important to note a bit of a language thing, that hope is Kibo. In despair is Zetsubo.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They are very similar linguistically.
I love Zetsubo. I'm a big fan of his sensei.
I mean, yeah, that Zetsubo sensei is despair sensei.
Yeah.
But that's why those are often paired together, is because there is a shared root to them.
Yeah.
So despair is an infinite energy cheat, and so they pile up girls with hope in you know, all this stuff, and then they bomb them with despair all at once.
Yep.
Kyubei is an alien, by the way. His species are called incubators.
A
wild naming sense.
Incubator.
Incubator. That's how Homura says it. And the best way they know to get despair is to turn magical girls into witches.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little detail that it is not explicitly said in the show, and it is not explicitly said in the movie, but the witch that killed Mommy, the way in which she became a witch, because if you remember, witches are magical girls, the way in which she became a witch is that, and again, I don't know what external media this is explained in, she wished to have, like, sweets with her, like, dead mom one last time, and then realized, and I'm willing to bet Kyubei fucking told her, realized that she could have wished for her mom back and immediately fell into despair.
Yeah.
And this is like an 8-year-old child, to be clear. Like, this is, again, Kyubei is like the, you know, top 10 fucking worst, least ethical characters.
And that's saying something.
It really is.
So Kyoko hopes that Madoka can convince Sayaka to stop being a witch, I guess.
Yeah,
so
it's essentially like, hey, this is a long shot, but we've never tried.
Yeah. So they all band together and go into Sayaka's labyrinth to try to stop her. Sayaka, so as far as the symbolism goes, Sayaka, I think, is where the witch symbolism is the most apparent, because this is the character we know the most about prior to becoming a witch.
Yeah.
She has, like, sheet music and a musical motif in general surrounding her. She has, like, conductors and violinists representing Kyosuke.
Yeah.
And that missed opportunity. But she herself, she sort of, her, so the witches are fantastical and monstrous. Sayaka's witch is like a queen of hearts.
Yes.
With a big heart-shaped head, and she uses her sword like a conductor's baton.
Yeah.
Though it kind of also looks like a violin bow, but mostly a sword and conductor baton.
It's very like this, for some reason I want to say that her queen of hearts witch kind of looks like King of Cosmos, or like that style.
Yeah, kind of. Very pompous.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot, they're like, I think they have the frilly collar.
Yeah.
And like the dress is also very poofy at the bottom.
And like shoulder epaulettes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really striking. And again, the fact that you know so much about Sayaka really helps you understand all the symbolism. And I think makes it worth going back to the other witches to try to figure out what you can piece together from their ideas and motifs.
Yeah.
Sayaka's little adds, her summons, are little soldiers. And so she has a royal aspect and this music aspect. She has a very classical theme altogether.
I think there's like a, I want to say that they look a little bit like marching band dudes as well.
So
a little bit Black Parade-ish.
Yeah. Kind of. So the I think this is interesting because it connects to Kyosuke, but also I feel like she does like classical music.
Yeah.
She's not like putting on airs because she likes this boy. It's like a part of her.
Yeah.
And also this fits with her sort of, she's very chivalrous.
Yeah, yeah, it's very,
her
like...
Her perspective on heroics is tied to chivalry.
The fact that, you know, her outfit and whatnot is also kind of medieval fantasy inspired and whatnot, it's, that's a very good point that, like, it ties in very well with her chivalrous nature.
Her desire to be a knight. She wants to save Kyosuke, who is, like, the princess in the tower. In this case, it's a hospital with many floors. But he is confined to a bed.
And he is a princess.
Yes. Much respect. But, like, she wants to rescue Kyosuke, who is the princess. She likes classical things. She likes this very classical idea of a hero and what a hero is, what the hero does. She has, like, honor in a way that she won't forego. In a way, she kind of treats the, like, refusing other people's soul gems as, like, I want to earn my work, or I want to earn my keep. I don't want handouts.
Yeah, it's considering that Kyoko is the daughter of a preacher, it's a very Protestant work ethic kind of view from Sayaka.
And there's a parallel between Sayaka refusing the apple that Kyoko gave her and Sayaka refusing the grief seed that Kyoko gave her. Like, Sayaka, I think, has very big hopes and ideals that she is unable to reach. And also then the bit with the train is like, there is no chivalry.
Yeah.
These men have no respect or honor. It's not just that. I mean, they are terrible people and that's pretty much it. But like, you could then frame that as they have no chivalry. The classics are dead. And I don't mean that in a, you know, everything was better way. But more so that I think there is something to be said about her character as believing in ideals that are kind of gone.
Yeah.
Modern society as a place that has no room for classic ideals, in that it has no place for things like heroics and chivalry, is a often trotted sort of theme. And I think in many ways Sayaka and the way she contrasts with Kyoko helps illustrate this.
Yeah.
Speaking of contrasting with Kyoko, so Madoka cannot talk Sayaka out of being a witch. It was futile. It, obviously. Kyoko says, hey, Homura, you take Madoka to safety, because Sayaka's kicking our ass. I'll stay here and put a stop to her. There's a great bit where Sayaka uses some ability to, like, summon a dragon, sort of, or a serpent out of magic. Her magic is, like, she creates chains out of red diamonds.
Yeah.
I don't know how to put it other than it looks like a warning error, or like a street sign, maybe, but it's red. I feel like it looks very sci-fi in contrast. Like, I've seen sci-fi anime that have hologram warning signs that pop up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they ultimately are chains in a way. And Kyoko, she like rides this giant serpent that she summoned, or dragon, kind of leading with the Chinese theme. She raises her halberd like a spear. It glows with energy. And with her last effort, she stabs Sayaka, while Sayaka also, like, stabs and kills Kyoko at the same time.
Yeah.
And this is so gay.
Yeah, it's the gayest thing that's trauma ever been put
trauma bonding to Yuri. Like, this is a very popular ship, but it's also just kind of, it's not overt text, but it is very subtext.
It would be extremely surprising if this was not intended. You know, it's like,
there is, I think you see this in a lot of queer circles. The idea that, like, people who have trauma are likely to seek out people with the same trauma because they know what they've been through.
Yeah.
That they bond over these experiences and are able to grow healthier by sharing it, by knowing that by recognizing others' trauma and having their trauma be recognized. And I think in many ways that is what Kyoko has been trying to do ever since the bridge bit.
Yeah.
Is that she understands that Sayaka is in pain, and she understands that pain as well, and, like, sees a lot of herself and her past mistakes in Sayaka. And they don't fully grow closer over the course of the series, but I think you see Kyoko try more and more to be close to Sayaka and being someone she can rely on. In many ways, this sacrifice is the final effort of that. It is also the time where she's finally able to. She literally pierces Sayaka's shell and heart.
She literally gets through to Sayaka.
Yeah. And, like, so they don't really have romantic tension in the anime. The movie, on the other hand. but I can definitely... It's very easy to see why it's such a popular relationship / ship for fans of the series.
Yeah. Small brief aside, I just want to step in. This is not about to be, like, pro-shipping, anti-shipping discourse. I will literally be dead and cold in the ground before I ever get into pro- or anti-shipping discourse. But I do want to just briefly pop in and say that I engage with a non-zero amount of people who think that it is weird at all to be basically into any fandom, who think that the idea of I want these two fictional teenagers to kiss is weird, period. I just want to emphatically say, fuck that, I want these two teenagers to kiss.
I want them to find happiness with each other.
Yeah, I just bring it up to be like, I think that there is a perfectly healthy way to be like, these are two fictional characters who it is very satisfying to see together, considering that they're, you know, we've seen them go through so much together, and they kind of have been, you know, implied to be, like, maybe a little bit into each other, and, like, it's one of those things where it's just, like, I want to step in and be, like, this is fine. It is fine to be a fan of shit, and it is fine to be a fan of things and be, like, yeah, I think Madoka and Homura should... if Madoka and Homura don't have an on-screen kiss in the third movie, then I will call for the execution of...
So, I think this is a very fitting end for Kyoko also, because she kind of gets rid of all of her morals and ideals, all her positions. She does a selfless act of sacrifice to help a few people, ultimately, and she dies in the process. She doesn't get to, like, get the grief seed that Sayaka would drop.
Yeah,
She wastes food in that regard, and she does so knowing that, she will die. Ultimately, it's a selfless sacrifice, which is the thing she preaches not to do.
It's a direct parallel / mirror to the thing that she said before.
Yes. So, she slays Sayaka, but dies in the process.
She slays Sayaka.
And at the end of this, Kyubei turns to Homura and states what is plainly the truth now. Walpurgis not, that thing that was going to be really bad... Homura is the only one around that's a real magical girl. The only way to stop it is going to be for Madoka to become a magical girl. The thing Homura has been trying to stop. Why was she trying to stop that?
Well,
episode 10 is phenomenal because it starts with Madoka, who is a very positive and upbeat person, very outgoing and lovable and energetic. And she's in school hanging out with her friends Sayaka and Hitomi when there's a new transfer student. The teacher says that she was in the hospital for some reason for like the whole rest of the school year, like 3 months. She hasn't been to school, but she is now coming to school having been fully discharged from the hospital. She introduces Homura Akemi, who is a shy, quiet girl with big glasses, braids, very bookish, very unsure of herself.
Now wait just a gosh darn second. I thought you told me that she was actually a very quiet, silently sinister girl who uses a gun. What happened here?
So, Homura gets stuck in a labyrinth, but is saved from a witch by Mami, Sayaka, and Madoka. So, Madoka, her magical girl outfit, is pretty much the one that's in the anime opening. Madoka has like a cherub sort of theme. She is an archer. She uses bows with hearts.
Yeah.
And so there's like an angelic element, a cherub element.
Yeah, very Cupid element.
Very cute. Well, yes. So this is sort of a role reversal to how the rest of the anime has been. Madoka is the one that's confident and Homura is shy and nervous. Homura kind of hangs out with them as the normie.
Yeah, Homura. So the interesting thing is that we see Homura as the one who doesn't really know whether or not to make a wish and become a magical girl, while palling around with all of them.
Yeah. So, however, we get a glimpse at Walpurgis Knot. This big flying witch thing, but it's present in the real world, not in a labyrinth.
Yeah.
It has, like, gears and shit or something. And it's, like, rainy. The city's been destroyed. It's like the end of Sonic Adventure.
It's like a fucking clock tower blew up in the middle of a lake, and, you know, we are now sitting in the bombed out husk of the lake. Because there's a lot of, like, brickwork that's destroyed, and
it's apocalyptic.
Yeah, yeah.
And so everyone fucking died in this fight. And Homura, including Madoka, and Homura decides to make a wish. She makes a wish that she will save Madoka, because Homura has a thing for Madoka.
Yeah. Because Homura is good friends with Madoka.
And Homura gets the ability to travel through time. Turn back time, especially. She goes back in time and goes back to when she transferred in. The next timeline, the next time loop, I guess, she joins the magical girl squad and she's like, hi, I'm new. I just moved here. Also, I'm a magical girl, but I'm new to that too. And they're like, okay, let's come up with ideas to use your time stop powers. What if we put bombs on the, on the enemies?
Oh, man. So, yeah. Like, there's the scene where, like, she's, you know, trying to figure things out and she's not 100% certain. But then she gets, like, the talking to, I think, from Madoka. And the scene where she's like, I know what I'm going to do, is her, like, building fucking pipe bombs and, like, time-stopping at a literal, like, military-grade armory.
It
is so, like,
she steals guns and she builds pipe bombs.
And this is, like, shy Homura, too.
Yeah.
This is Homura before she became a weird freak.
Yeah. So at the end of that loop, they actually successfully defeat Walpurgis Knot. But Madoka, having seen all her friends die except Homura, Homura and Madoka are the only one alive. Madoka becomes a witch, and Homura realizes what's going on. So she turns back time again. On the next loop, she tries to tell everyone that magical girls will eventually become witches, but they just do not believe her. But in this loop, Sayaka does end up becoming a witch, who they have to kill. Mami tries, she kills Kyoko, because Kyoko's also there in this loop. Mami kills Kyoko, because she's like, if we're just going to become witches, we need to die before we do that. That's the moral imperative.
Yeah.
That if we could become witches that could kill, you know, unknown hundreds amounts of people, we need to die. So she kills Kyoko. She tries to kill Homura, but Madoka stops her and kills Mami instead. So during the fight against Walpurgis Knot, it's just Madoka and Homura. They're both very injured, and Madoka it, like, on her last breath, gives Homura the last grief seed. Homura goes back in time, and again, and again, and again, and that's when she starts to go into military bases to steal, like, huge guns and shit. She becomes a badass, she starts wearing contacts, she pulls her, or she lets her hair down.
Her hair, yeah. Yeah. She has this very striking straight black hair, and, like, it's very iconic to the point where when she shows up in episode 10 with braided hair, it is deeply confusing.
Yeah. Also worth noting is that Madoka, in I think the first timeline, or that one with the grief seed, gives Homura a hair tie, which Homura gives to Madoka at the start of the series. Either that or it's the other way around. There's a hair tie that is passed between Homura and Madoka multiple times.
Yeah, yeah.
Though Madoka doesn't understand the significance. Oh, I think...
Are you sure you're not thinking of...
No, I think it's Homura has it... I think Homura starts with it, then gives it to Madoka.
I don't think she gives it to Madoka, because if I remember correctly, she gets it at the end, of course. But I don't think it changes hands... Shit.
Okay. We'll solve the mystery later, but there is a hair tie that has passed between them more than once, and I'm confident of that.
Yeah, yeah.
That
yeah.
It goes back and forth a few times. And so, at this point, we know now that Homura traveled through time, became a badass, knows what's going to happen.
Saw her girlfriend die 1,000 times.
And had to, you know, live with her not knowing her.
Yeah.
And she decided, I'm going to do whatever it takes to keep Madoka from becoming a magical girl. That way she'll never become a witch. And that way will not put herself in danger with Walpurgis Knot. And I'll figure something else out. She only cares at this point about saving Madoka and making Madoka happy. Which is why she's okay with things like mommy dying.
Yeah.
Even though she did try to stop mommy from dying.
Like, yeah. She has been on the side of the group, but she has been very distant when, you know, people would die or when bad shit would happen to them. Because she's seen it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And she knows that she can't talk them out of it.
And the fact that Homura starts off the bat as being untrustworthy means that in the show's main timeline, she couldn't just say, oh, magical girls will eventually become witches.
Yeah.
They wouldn't believe her, as she's already been seen. I think it is very easy as a viewer to be like, well, why didn't she just warn them if Kyubei wasn't gonna? But Homura already tried that and it didn't work.
Yeah.
That all is episode 10. Episode 11, Kyubei realizes that the reason why Madoka's potential is so high is because of the time traveling. There's like a karmic entropy going on, where like, because Homura time loops due to Madoka, there's like more universal weight and importance on Madoka.
It's the kind of monkey's paw thing, as you mentioned, where like, because she has reset it so many times in the effort of not making Madoka the important one, Madoka has become the important one.
Yeah. Again, the wishes never work out. So, because of that, by the way, if Madoka becomes a witch, she could become an even more powerful witch than Walpurgis Knot.
Yeah.
And, again, everyone else is dead. And, like, so this also means that Homura doesn't really have the option of traveling back through time again, because it would probably just be too much at that point.
Yeah.
The world could end entirely if Madoka does anything. Kyubei, there's a bit where Kyubei also mentions to Madoka that magical girls have appeared throughout human history.
Yeah.
And one of them is Joan of Arc.
Yep, yep. I think that's literally a side series is about the Joan of Arc arc.
That would be wild. Yeah. This is a thing that magical girls aren't inherent to Japan. Though I think, like, maybe it's because Madoka's there, but Japan has a nexus of energy.
It has a statistically significant amount.
Yeah. But, yeah, it shows magical girls in a few different scenes from multiple time periods and places in the world. And we'll get to that a bit later. Homura is about to tell Madoka that, you know, she's gone back in time to try to stop this when a giant storm hits the city. Everyone's evacuated, and Walpurgis Knot appears. Kyubei follows Madoka, by the way, who's going to the shelter with her family. And Kyubey's like, hey, Madoka, if Homura loses to Walpurgisnacht, she could become a witch, and you don't want that. And also, Homura's going to lose to this witch by herself, so you should totally make a contract. At this point, Madoka and her family are in the shelter, which I think might just be their school.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Isn't like a great storm shelter because it's all glass?
Yeah, it's there's a great scene where Madoka is about to run out into yes. the storm. And she has a heart-to-heart with her mother, where her mother's like, what the fuck are you doing? And, you know, Monica's like, I can't really explain it, but I have a friend who desperately needs me right now.
And her mom slaps her, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Her mom is like, you're endangering your life, and you can't tell me why. This is a great moment because it brings catharsis to that gap that's been forming between them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, at the start, they can wordlessly brush their teeth together and her mom can pass the towel to her without having to be told or asked.
Yeah.
But by the end, like, Madoka... There's also a scene in one of the episodes before this where, again, her mom is talking with her teacher and her mom is kind of lamenting, like, yeah, she doesn't tell me anything and I know she's struggling, but she won't tell me, and her teacher's like, just have to let them make mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
One of those aspects of, like, you know, the parent has to trust the kid a little.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, it's... this is part of why I really like that little ongoing theme and her relationship, Monica's relationship with her mother. Because it is a really, like, fun and interesting relationship and a very fun and interesting sort of portrayal where, you know, her mom is kind of eventually trusting enough to be like, all right, I will let my daughter do the thing that she needs to.
Though she did slap her. Also, this is another aspect where, like, kids who have been abused by institutions or, you know, things like that might not be able to tell their parents, not for a literal reason of not be able to, but, like, might not feel comfortable to or might not be believed if they tell their parents.
Yeah.
And that aspect of, like, I can't talk to you because you won't believe me permeates this series a lot and is at the core of Madoka's relationship with her mom and is, again, also something that can happen with children who are abused by institutions, like I said.
That was always one of my least favorite tropes as a child, where the child character tells does the responsible thing and tells the adult, and the adult's like, shut the fuck up, that's obvious bullshit. But I will say, having now grown up, honestly, that's probably top 10 tropes. That's one of the most salient.
I have actual trauma relating to that sort of thing.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Like, I hate it when I see it because I empathize with it. It's just not normally treated well like it is here,
yes,
to an extent.
Yes.
So Madoka runs out into the storm, which is the end of episode 11. Episode 12, Homura is on her last breath, and Madoka shows up and makes her wish. The series has been building up to Madoka's wish. It's sort of why she does it and how she does it. And her wish is that all witches would be saved before becoming a witch, preventing them from ever happening. This creates a paradox.
Yeah.
Madoka ejects herself from the universe by creating a paradox.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, save all witches before they become witches, which means they won't become witches. But also, so there's like the causality there. But also, she says, like, all witches that will happen and have ever happened.
Yeah.
Meaning
yeah.
she is affecting in the entire timeline of the universe, including Joan of Arc and all those other girls that were shown before.
And not only the timeline of this universe, too. Because as is later made explicit, but kind of just hinted at in the OG series, all of the timelines, like all of the sort of whatever fractured timeline things Homura sort of created, you know, however she sort of like split the time stream, all of those timelines yeah. are also independently saved.
Including the ones where Madoka became a witch.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, like, Madoka became a magical girl and made this wish because of witches. Those played a part in her decision. So there's, like, essentially don't think about it. Madoka gets ejected from the universe, and this isn't okay. I'll talk about this after I explain what happens. There's a montage of all the magical girls throughout the history and the world. There's like a sort of sub-Saharan African girl,
yeah,
who gets saved. There's a starving girl in like a war-torn country.
Yeah, there's the like. Not a good joke to make, but the joke that I made when I saw that was, the 9/11 magical girl. Like, it really does give sort of vibes like it is a war-torn...
I don't remember if there was a Holocaust magical girl, but I feel like there might have been.
I don't know if there was anything that I could necessarily have seen that would signify. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Word of God was like, well, yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, anywhere where there could be a young girl in a significant amount of distress. So, obviously.
So, Madoka appears in this montage as, like, she looks a bit older. She has longer hair, like, much longer hair.
Yeah.
And she wears a white dress, almost like a wedding gown.
Yeah. She's also, like, sort of, I think, like, sparkling a little bit as well.
Yeah,
she
has glowing.
The sheen
radiant
about her. Yeah.
Yeah. She's sort of a spectral form. And so the series says that she becomes a concept.
Yeah.
They later call this the law of cycles.
Also, notably, by the way, at the very end, and I think Homura sees this, at the very end, like, after the wish is made, she is, like, about to become a witch. Madoka is about to become a witch, except that, like, Homura, I think, then yells out, you know, like, no, Madoka, no! And then Madoka says, don't worry, you know, from space or whatever, says, like, well, don't worry, because I wish to save every witch. Which means I saved myself, and we see, like, the ultimate version of her, Gadoka, basically.
Yeah, Gadoka or Madokami.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, you know, it is a version of her that is same design concept, but I think it's, like, even, you know, older, even more kind of angelic and whatnot. And so, like, she fires an arrow to save herself, which then, as mentioned, causes this, like, weird time paradox where she gets subsumed into reality as, like, a natural law.
Yeah, it's unclear on purpose, I think.
Yeah.
It's like they call her a concept or the embodiment of the law of cycles, but also she does kind of have a physical form that is both seen and interacts with things as that, like, giant God Madoka form.
Yeah.
So, like, she doesn't fully do that. She also is kind of... She's not fully omnipotent, but she does have powers. But she's not fully a god, but she's kind of a god.
She has, like, ultimate unlimited power when it comes to very specifically the act of saving magical girls before they become witches.
And this becomes even more complicated by the movie.
Yeah.
Which we won't be able to get to in this episode. It's already been long enough. This might even be two episodes. But ultimately this ends with the universe breaking apart and reforming. Homura, by the way, is there as well as Kyubei.
Yeah.
They're just, like, watching this. Homura gets to watch the universe rebuild itself.
Yeah, they're both sitting on the front row, their silhouettes. they're jeering at the camera.
Yeah, like, Homura, I don't remember if it's because of her connection to Madoka or if it's because of her connection with time.
I think it's the time thing that, like, is the reason that she sort of exists outside of time as the universe then starts forming itself around her. But we do, like, they do at the very least, like, as the universe has been disassembled and is, like, coming back in on itself, we get a scene where Homura and Madoka are, like, floating in space, hugging.
One final embrace before Homura wakes up in the new world.
Yeah.
A world without Madoka. She's playing with Madoka's brother.
Yeah.
By, like, a riverbed, and the brother draws a figure of Madoka.
Yeah.
Like, draws Madoka's face in the sand or in the dirt. And Madoka's mom and dad walk by and they're like, thank you for playing with our son. You know, that's very kind of you. And she's also like, you know, he keeps talking about an imaginary friend named Madoka.
Yeah.
That's a nice name, isn't it? And then I think what it is Gatoka gives Homura a hairband at this point.
Yes.
A hair ribbon, yes, to remember her by.
Yes.
And so in this universe, Homura has the hair ribbon on.
Because I think notably the son, the Madoka's brother, is a baby, by the way. That's who Homura's been playing with. I think he notably, like, points at her, yeah, ribbon and is like, Madoka!
Yeah.
And, like, that's, you know, she has kind of a shocked reaction, but then is like, yeah, Madoka!
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, at least someone remembers her other than Homura.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all fine and dandy. There's still a problem. There's race.
Yep, that's right. So the new status quo as we get in like the last half of the final episode is that the world still does exist and the world still does have magical girls. But instead of witches being like the thing that they fight, there are different like magical creatures. Specifically, like you said, we get wraiths, although I think nightmares
that's
get brought
that's
up
in Rebellion.
Different...
That's
okay,
in
that's
movie.
In Rebellion, yeah.
There are just wraiths. Luckily, the Kyubeys of this world still exist, don't know what witches are.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, like, there's one following Homura around while Homura is killing wraiths. And he's like, you know, you keep talking about witches. That sure is weird. Too bad we don't have that, or else that'd be a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Good thing we have at least wraiths, they're good enough.
Yeah, yeah. Kyubey is like, Homura presumably has been just mentioning this, you know, thing from another reality that apparently doesn't exist. And yeah, Kyubey is literally just like, man, that would be super cool and convenient if we had witches instead. Oh, that'd be awesome. Like,
yeah,
just in the most, like, you piece of shit way possible.
So, essentially, what has happened is that Madoka's wish had very little effect. In tune with the monkey's paw, the final finger having curled, essentially, Madoka wished for there to be no witches, but something else has replaced witches as being a monster that causes grief and requires magical girls to fight them. And even then, what is essentially happening is that magical girls, their grief seeds turn dark, they're about to become witches, they're saved by Madoka, so they don't become witches, but, like, they essentially do. They're just banned.
It's third time I'm going to make specific religious parallels, but it's kind of like she essentially creates a form of heaven, which is good. It is a better ending than the, you know, abject tragedy that they had before, but it doesn't get rid of the tragedy.
And
it gives them a happy ending, but it doesn't give them a happy life.
And it also doesn't, there's no mention of them, of the magical girls having consciousness out. Look, there's kind of a mention of magical girls having consciousness outside of once they become witches and are saved by Madoka. It's still very vague.
Yeah.
I think the series ends on a vague note because they have gotten so, like, magical and Puella. They have gotten so, like, surreal that it only makes sense to end it on a surreal note. That, like,
yeah.
They've
yeah.
gotten so fantastical that they can't have a mundane ending.
Like, yeah, even arguably, even by the end of the movie, it isn't really certain whether, like, what Madoka does is, you know, literally physically take you to some kind of fun, happy place, or if it's just sort of like you don't have the tragedy of becoming the witch, but that's really all you get. It's very atheistic of, like, you just sort of get peace, the peace of mind. It's uncertain. But at the same time, it's uncertain in a way that still... It is a bittersweet ending, but it still does feel sweet in a way. The tragedy, so to speak, is that Madoka is such a, like, just kind of kind young lady that she takes it upon herself to save all of magical girl kind. But that is still a tragedy. That is still... Madoka doesn't necessarily get a happy ending in that case, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, that's still a very lovely and interesting through line where, like, even by becoming a symbol, even by becoming the conceptualization of a magical girl having a happy ending, she is still sort of damning herself to eternal servitude to what is now just a natural law, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It's wild.
It's wild. So it's cool as shit.
There's one final scene. Homura is, like, tired, and she's starting to question whether Madoka ever existed. She's in, like, a wasteland, like some apocalypse shit, fighting wraiths. But she collapses, and the last shot of the series is her soul gem turning black. Ooh. And then, like, a big darkness envelops her. That is the end of the original 12-episode anime. I love this series. It's in my top five anime. It's in many people's top five anime.
And it probably should be.
It is, I think, in a lot of ways, the first deconstruction of an anime genre that a lot of weebs had. Like, a lot of Western audiences had. Especially a genre that in the West kind of has one monolithic presentation that a lot of people are aware of that was also essentially for kids.
I would argue that, like, no small amount of the popularity from the West probably has to do with the fact that our specific cultural assumptions and cultural connection to magical girl as a genre was still very much in that, like, Sailor Moon and, like, very, you know, very, very young kind of, like, leaning purview.
Yeah.
And so it really hits, so to speak, when we got the magical girl, but it's fucked up series.
Yeah. And, like, I think a lot of the anime of the 2010s that kind of popped off, sort of, were tragedies.
Yeah.
The other main comparison point is Steins Gate, which you'll also see in a lot of top fives.
Yep.
That one also fucked up. Time loop, time travel, fucked up. Tragedy, fucked up. Tragic ending, I can't even say hashtag. But, like, I think anime had a reputation at that point of being a little subversive just by its country of origin in the West.
Yes. This is definitely still the 2010s is definitely still kind of the period where nerd culture is a separate culture from pop culture.
Yeah. Like, however, like, this is post-Toonami as well.
It is also, but
I believe Crunchyroll had already started to be a thing by this point.
It was the sort of thing where, like, it was getting popularized and it was not nearly as weird as it was throughout the 2000s. But I would say that it has not become normalized in the way that, like, nowadays you meet people all the time with, like, Demon Slayer merch, Naruto merch, like, mm-hmm. DBZ, obviously. But, like, this is still, like, the tail end of that period where anime is this kind of fringe thing here in the West.
Yeah. So this came out at a perfect point for it to reach an audience outside of Japan that would respond to it well, that are looking for a more mature topic or a more mature telling of a story that isn't necessarily an adult story, quote unquote, that doesn't have, like, sex.
Yeah.
You know, especially. But it is a serious story that has interesting things to say about it.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, a lot of the anime that were popular or getting translated at the time were shonen battle manga anime adaptations. And I think it's that aspect of it being a, like, introduction to a more literary, almost, form of anime.
Yeah.
Very, very thematic and poignant and story that has elements of it beyond entertainment.
It has a significant amount of, like, symbolism and, like, poeticism and, like, the all of the witches and all of the labyrinths, as you have already mentioned, are, like, very highly meaningful.
I didn't even go over all the symbols because, like, there's a lot of empty chairs.
Yeah.
I like to view those as the pressure that characters feel from others, even if it is imagined and not directly from people.
Yeah, yeah. There's, at the very least, like, there's a lot of good scenes that have the empty chairs, but a good one to highlight is, like, one of the later Kyosuke scenes.
Yeah.
I think the one when Kyosuke kind of breaks down at Sayaka and is like, you know, why are you tormenting me like this? That's one where it kind of showcases as he is, like, talking about, you know, how people you know, had so much faith in him and, like, he was going to be this prodigy. Like, it sort of zooms out to show all of the empty chairs surrounding him as if to see, as if to show, you know, all of the, like, empty responsibilities and all of the, like, pressures that are right up to the edge, but, like, technically all in your head.
Yeah.
It's so...
And then later, more empty chairs gradually start appearing in Madoka's bedroom.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, it has a lot of symbolism, and I think this is when the, like, explained in theory culture, in fan theory culture, started to really pick up.
Yeah, yeah.
So, there's a lot of cultural aspects around it that made it perfect for internet discussion. And I think also, there's sort of a twisted, unfortunate, toxic bit where, like, the big twist, as you noted, was... hugely spread.
Yeah.
It's the thing a lot of people know about the series without having seen the series. And there's sort of an element of gatekeeping associated with that, where because anime was starting to get more mainstream post the 2000s anime boom, at least again in the West and English speaking world, in America especially, because it started to get more popular, people were like, oh, you should watch this Magical Girl series.
Yeah.
It's like Sailor Moon. And then, like, yeah.
Yeah,
like
it's the shock content, the trick. Yeah.
Yeah, the shock content was kind of, in some regards, treated like a meat spin or a goatsy.
It's like recommending Spec Ops The Line to your friend who loves Call of Duty, you know?
Well, I mean, that's an imperative.
Yeah, that's a moral imperative.
That's just giving it to its target audience. It's like telling someone who likes Disney to watch Eraserhead.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's...
But also, it's doing so out of the guise of this is inapproachable to normies.
Yeah, it's...
It is a problem that we have talked about a bit in the past with things like MewCore, where, like, approachability versus inapproachability is viewed as a dichotomy between the masses and the cultured elite.
Yeah, yeah. I have the bandwidth to understand this because I am cultured enough to understand the intricacies of Magical Girl anime.
I think this idea of difficult and challenging media being used as a cudgel still happens, by the way.
Yes.
You could even see this with Silk Song.
Oh, in, God, like, yeah.
Elden Ring and... any type of FromSoft game comes out. happened with Armored Core.
I was going to also bring up Watchmen. I'm somebody who was very, very much into deconstructions as an idea and as a genre, and frankly still am. But I do think that, like, there was an aspect of, like, 2010s contrarianism, kind of along with the, like, I would liken it to, like, the atheist boom, where it's like, you know, you like series, you know, you like trope, you like genre. Well, don't you know that there's a great series that explains why that genre is actually a dog shit?
Yeah.
And so, like, it got that kind of reputation, like, as well, where it's like, this is the Magical Girl anime you watch when you hate Magical Girls.
Like, we're talking about art snobbery, which is a thing as old as art itself, which is pretty old when you can think about cave drawings.
Yeah.
But, like, I think it's also that the internet has made that more accessible. Not art, but it has made snobs more accessible.
It is so much easier to assume that you have some kind of refined palate because you and an IRC full of 50 people talk about one thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Especially if... like, this is also sort of the last kind of, I would say dying gasp, but also kind of a case of, like, still alive today. The like, last vestiges of, like, because I am a nerd who got bullied, no one else is allowed to be a nerd.
Yeah.
You know? This, again, a behavior that's still kind of around to this day, but is lessened by the fact that pop culture is in many ways nerd culture at this point. At the very least, yeah. Certain types of nerd culture. But anyway.
All this is to say that this is only ultimately a small part of Madoka's legacy. It is mostly known, other than the fact that it kills a character in the third episode.
Yeah.
As being a phenomenal piece of art that is meaningful and has, you know, intention and love put behind it. Is a collaboration by many people that work together under a shared vision to create something with purpose. And, like, it's not as monolithic now as it was at the time, especially with the hiatus between the movie and the next movie, which hasn't even come out yet. It's still very highly regarded and well-regarded, and the fact that the creators still do interviews about it just shows that there's still interest and, you know, there's merit to it. It still has things to say.
It still has cultural weight, and it's still the kind of thing that people are paying attention to, because something that comes from, like, something that is attached to the Modica brand has a specific set of assumptions about it. And those assumptions are, like, ingrained to, this is going to be exceptional and is going to, like, change my entire view on this whole genre, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, that doesn't necessarily always have to be 100% true. I'm sure that the gacha games that exist are not that, you know? I don't know if they have a gacha game.
They do.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm sure that the gacha game that exists is not that necessarily. But if you are especially when you are making something that is specifically a, like, big sequel, a big, like, next mainline entry, or perhaps last mainline entry, we don't know. This is a series that has weight. This is the kind of series where if we are going to get a revolutionary movie that changes the entire field of, like, Magical Girl, it's going to be from Modica. Or it's going to be from Sailor Moon, I don't know.
And people still relate to Madoka. Like,
yeah.
When I was younger and I first watched it, I think a lot of the allegory went over my head. But now that I'm older and more aware of the universe and the world, I guess, in people, I think I found even more enjoyment from it. And, like, it is something that is good for rewatches, not just because of, like, top 10 details you missed or elegant foreshadowing that makes it better the second time. You know, it's not just because of Tyler Durden.
Yeah.
It's because there is a lot to unpack in here, and we've barely even scratched the surface with this. Not just because we haven't covered the whole series, but because even just the 12-episode run has so much to it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of emotional truths at the core of Modica, and, like, it is that glorious kind of rare series where you can analyze it separately entirely on the merits of the text and entirely on the merits of, like, what it says about genre and what it says about entertainment industry and, like, the audience relationship to it. You can analyze it fully and, like, sufficiently from both angles, and then melding them together just kind of, like, adds so much more. It is robust. It is good in so many ways, and the things that are good about it are so good. I am still generally of the opinion that, like, even if a story is specifically relating to the struggles of a young, you know, a preteen growing up, if it's about high school, if it's about college, whatever, you can still easily relate to and understand the truths and the stories that are trying to be told to you. Lovely, lovely series. Modica deserves the best. Being Maguka is suffering.
Being Maguka is suffering. Good point. Yeah. And again, we're not even done with it, but we are done with this episode. We've been recording for like 3.5 hours.
Yeah, speaking of suffering, we too have been suffering. Yeah. And you can suffer as well.
I haven't had dinner yet, but yes, you can also... Well, I wouldn't want to say suffer, but maybe. I don't know.
You'd like to be in agony, follow us on Blue Sky on...
follow us at Netsurfer Pro on Blue Sky, where you can get updates on upcoming episodes, as well as updates on if we're going to have upcoming episodes, given this whole thing.
We're going to go on an 8-year hiatus after this episode, so...
Well, only because we're going to repeat the same episode 8 times.
Right, mm-hmm.
Yeah, whole other ballpark topic. You can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know if there's a topic you think we should cover or you think we might be interested in. And that's it for those plugs. You can follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/twack, where I stream video games. You can also follow me at twack.bsky.social. Both of those are TWAK, by the way. And I post on Blue Sky a mixture of things. Lately, there's been a lot of pinball posting because I've been playing a lot of pinball.
And as for myself, you can find me on Blue Sky at galenwilson.bsky.social. That's GALENWILS0N. I post my hot takes and whatever's kind of on my mind. I've been trying to use social media a little less, only speak when I feel I have something to say. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube, and you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire, where one of these days I'm gonna start streaming, maybe.
Nice.
Who knows?
Nice. Good, good.
Yep.
Well, you'll just have to follow all of those in order to get the updates on when that'll happen.
And check them every hour on the hour.
Every dot on the dot.
Every day.
Every channel. Every single channel. Check every channel. Check the channel now.